Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Hour of the Time with your host here, Doyle Shamley, in Eager, Arizona. Now, I want to thank all of you for tuning in this evening, and you can thank yourselves for the wonderful information that you're going to learn. But first, some announcements. You can contact the Hour of the Time by writing Hour of the Time, or HOTT, H-O-T-T, P.O. Box 940, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona, 85925. Again, that's Hour of the Time, P.O. Box 940, Eager, Arizona, 85925. The website, hourofthetime.com. The studio number, 928-333-2942. And my personal email address, hourofthetime@hotmail.com. Now we're going to take a break from our current series that we've been doing every evening and begin back on Tuesday evenings with our very special guest and friend, David Christopher, from the School of Natural Healing. So I want to bring him on right now. David, are you there?
I'm here.
All righty. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing just fantastic.
Good, good. David, we have, through the winter and spring, gotten a lot of new listeners, younger listeners, which is good. And except for reruns, there haven't been really exposed to your programming or your institute or any of that. So could you give some information on that and how they can contact the School of Natural Healing and all that stuff?
Yeah, the School of Natural Healing was established in 1953, and its purpose is to have an herbalist in every home and a master herbalist in every community. By doing this, we could save the country billions and billions, maybe trillions of dollars. We could use it for other worthwhile projects, like maybe building roads or feeding the poor or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But at any rate, if people just understood the basic principles of natural healing and understood the herbs, then their use of the medical profession would be very limited. The medical profession has its uses, and we're not trying to take that away. What we're saying is that 90-something percent of everything that happens around the home can be taken care of through simple techniques
mm-hmm.
that you learn at the School of Natural Healing. School of Natural Healing, you can find us on the internet. We're at schoolofnaturalhealing.com. You can get there quicker by just doing the initials of the school, snh.cc. And that'll give you the information you need on the school. And I'd really encourage people to be students. It'll protect their health and maybe even save their lives.
And I certainly agree, David, because I can vouch the fact that 90%, once you have the learning, 90% of the predicaments a person finds themselves in can be fixed with the learning from your school. I can attest to that. And the feeling of independence and knowledge is a great thing. It's true freedom. I mean, you're not tied and strapped to every little thing that comes up. Oh, my child's vomiting, I better run to the emergency room, or you're up out on a trip and cancel everything or stop everything to find the nearest clinic, when you can do it yourself. It's independence.
That's absolutely correct. You know, there's really no need to interrupt life because of insignificant things that are happening. If you don't take care of them, they may become significant. But that's what the whole point of the course is how to resolve the problem, not just placate it. And a lot of what you get through medicine anyway is just placating.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with the school, we get right down to the basics and solve the problem.
Mm-hmm. The medical establishment tends to attack the symptoms, not the disease, and it just
right.
compiles
you
more.
Symptoms, you never get rid of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Problem will always come back.
Mm-hmm.
one way or another.
Mm-hmm. Now, David, you know, I'm pleased again to have you at the conference this year. And last year, your presentation is excellent. You not only kept the audience entertained with the jokes about cows sucking on udders and various things.
Oh, yeah.
But it was thorough. It was easy to understand. It was relaxed. I like the fact that you took a moment of silence to start out the day, which is a good thing to do, despite what the government may say. And the field walks were wonderful, where you showed people hands-on identification, and they could feel of it and smell of it and find out its uses and actually see it, which is so much better than in a book for a lot of people. So I'm pleased that you're coming again this year, and we're going to do, you know, extend that learning a step above. You know, just we were talking a brief recap of last year's topics, and I've got the list together for you, and then expand it and go beyond. And I think it's going to be a wonderful benefit to all those that come out and attend. And so, again, just an open thank you for coming again and showing your support for these type of events.
Okay. It was fun last time. I'm sure we're going to have a good time this time.
Yeah. Now, David, one thing, we have a couple topics we were going to cover this evening. What I was thinking of was, let's start off with this Valley Fever, only because it's prevalent in the Southwest, and there is a lot of people in the Southwest, and that includes a lot of California, the whole central section. And then after some musical break and interlude in about the half-hour mark, let's get into some of the summertime cautions that people need to think about, just with the amount of heat and the increase in activities outdoors. Does that sound okay?
Sure.
Okay.
In fact, why don't you tell them a little bit about what Valley Fever is?
Sure. Well, looking at various institutes and just firsthand experience, I've never had it, but I grew up where it was heavy, so I saw lots of people with it. Valley Fever is a fungus, a fungal infection. It can be deadly. And even when it's not deadly, it's quite harmful, it's horrific, it scars the lungs. They figure there's about 100,000 cases a year of it in dry, dusty areas. That's where it's prevalent. And so it's going to hit people that are involved in farming, construction work, road work, those type of environments. But it also hits the indoor type construction, not just heavy. It often hits people that are going in and remodeling old homes or in dusty environments, attics, etc. Exposure to the dust and dry soils and the dust from the work is what gets it in a person's lungs. The Mayo Clinic, instead of using the big fancy term for the fungi, they just call it cocci for short. And it's a fungus, as we've talked about. The spores are what gets in your lungs. 60% of the people that catch it don't come up with symptoms right away. So it festers, if you will, in your lungs. About the other 40%, actually they claim 39, get the flu-like symptoms. And they're for about a month. They just keep going and going. They don't go away. And that's an indication that you could possibly have it. And they're extreme flu-like symptoms. Extreme fatigue, joint aches, chest aches, muscles, headaches. Headaches are about 50-50 is all. And in about 1%, it goes into severe pneumonia, meningitis, by spreading into the actual bones, marrow. If it gets onto the skin, it spreads, and it can get into the brain fluids, hence the meningitis. So it isn't something to play with. And at this point right now, they use antifungal drugs as all to treat it. They're not the greatest. They're hard on the person taking them. They're expensive. The regime to get to the point of diagnosing it as Valley Fever is long and drug out. They're going to check you because of the scarring. They're going to check you for asbestos and lung cancer and this whole rigmarole before they get down to the finite thing with biopsies and blood work. And at first, it generally gets treated as a common flu. They give you some antibiotics and it only makes the situation worse because your immune system gets hurt even more. And one of the clinics out there right now is working on a deal, of course, with government grants to, that's called the Valley Fever Vaccine Project of the Americas. And that Americas is always nice, a little crappy term we hear, but they want to make a vaccine that could just be administered like all the numerous other vaccines ahead of time and theoretically just keep you from catching it. Now, David's going to discuss some ways to fight this fungus naturally. And
Doyle, I didn't know there were any vaccines against fungus. I know there's vaccines against bacteria and against viruses. I didn't know there was any against fungus.
Neither did I until you and I started looking into this. I had no clue that there was a fungal vaccine, but that's what this... in fact, it's valleyfever.com. They grabbed, like, the main website.
They're looking for a vaccine, right?
Mm-hmm.
They don't have one.
No, it's the typical government grant scheme to, this foundation is getting grant money to try to develop a vaccine. And, then I'm sure they'll try to promulgate it on the southwest of the United States at least. If not anywhere where there's farming, you know, the main industry. So they could, I mean, it'd be easy to try to convince the medical establishment and the school system, et cetera, that it's spread it across, you know, 80% of America.
They do find something that's going to be pretty amazing. I mean, pneumonia's been around a long time. They can't find a vaccine against pneumonia. You know, pneumonia's caused from a fungus and is inhaled.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think it's just another scam. Even if they came up with some liquid thing they injected, I don't know that it would do any good. I think it just is going to come down to trying to work on people's fears and lack of knowledge and convince areas where it is on the news or where it is a common ailment that, oh, well, if you take this, you can avoid it. Kind of like the lady's anti-cancer injection.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the direction it's going. It's just going to be marketing and sales. That's it. Its effectiveness, I think, will be nil, if not bad for a person. Like the current side effects right now of the antifungal drugs, they're using two main ones. Fluconazole and itraconazole, and the side effects are vomiting, diarrhea, abdominal pains. Being the environment where most Valley Fever cases are, dry, warm, or outright hot environments, the last thing a person needs is to add to their dehydration with diarrhea and vomiting. So, and the side effects are actually quite common, it says. And I'm getting this from the Mayo Clinic. So, I think there's obviously some more common sense ways when you're exposed and you just have to work in dust. The guy just can't avoid it. I mean, it's just a fact in certain fields of work and areas of the country. And also some ways to treat it naturally that would be a lot safer for a person. So why don't we get into that? What the best ways, you know, naturally to treat a fungus would be.
Well, you know, a fungus isn't a bacteria. It's not an animal life form. It's a plant life form, and it doesn't have, you know, doesn't produce chlorophyll, and so it doesn't use light. And so you usually find funguses in dark, moist places.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's why you can do well in your body because it's, you know, away from the sunlight there.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that we do with an exposure like that is, of course, expose it to light.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with Valley Fever, we're talking about something on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So when this fungus gets in, you know, and it's, you know, you think of fungi, you know, you think of, you know, mushrooms.
Yes.
You know, there's nothing wrong with mushrooms. Those taste really good, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But this particular, you know, type of fungus isn't so great. And I'm sure it doesn't taste good either.
No.
In fact, a lot of your antibiotics are made from what fungus gives off. You know, some of them are made from bacteria and a lot of them are made from fungus. And so they produce a poison that's extremely toxic to your system.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's the whole point of antibiotics, is that you use this substance that's produced by these bacteria or this fungi to stop the growth of, you know, bacteria and different organisms.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we talked about before on the program, you know, humans, you know, got rid of a lot of diseases when they built sewer systems.
Mm-hmm.
When we stopped wading in our own waste.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, these life forms can't do that either. So when you flood the body with those substances that are created by them, you know, basically their excrements, then they can't survive. And that's why antibiotics and these medications work, because they're basically just poisoning the area.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, they've found that to be effective, but with, like you mentioned, side effects. And so our point with the School of Natural Healing would be to use natural methods to achieve the same purpose even better and, you know, get rid of the problem. And so I guess the first thing you'd have to ask is, does everyone that's out in these areas come down with belly fever?
No, it's just, you can get exposed to it. I grew up in a prevalent area, the San Joaquin Valley, of valley fever, and never had it personally, but it will typically, and I did a lot of outdoor work.
Sure.
Picking, groves, construction, all that is accompanying that, and it's all dusty. And the military personnel are one of the big categories that catch it, according to the Mayo Clinic. And again, you're out in field environments, even in training.
But the thing is, like over in Iraq, Iraqis aren't getting it, are they?
No.
But we are.
Exactly.
You know, and the same thing out in the desert where you are, some people are getting it and some people aren't.
Yeah, so
now
it's...
Now what we're going to have to do is look at, okay, what's the difference between person A and person B?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the person that gets it, how they differ from the person that doesn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where they need to research, not just in areas of how we're going to kill these things. I think they need to research the host, the receptor of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know? They need to look at people and say, how come these people get it and these people don't?
Mm-hmm.
What's going on here? Now, what do you think would be the difference between Iraqis and American soldiers?
Well, it would be diet.
Yeah, diet. Now, how about the number of vaccines that American soldiers get?
Yeah, they get a minimum of 7 before they leave the United States.
And then they get doused with a bunch of chemicals too, don't they?
Yep, that's quite typical.
Well, and the Iraqis don't. So I guess we'd have to say, in a situation like that, well, Iraqis don't get this, and American soldiers do, because maybe the environment of American soldiers has been changed with all the vaccines and all the chemicals they've been putting in them.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you have diet. You
mm-hmm.
know, perhaps what you eat has a lot to do with if you're going to get something.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess another thing we have to do is look at immune system, you know, because we all have an immune system, but it seems like the Iraqi immune system is working better than the American soldier immune system, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Same thing out in the desert. You know, your immune system must have been working better than somebody else's.
Mm-hmm.
For you not to get it and somebody else to get it.
Exactly.
And I think a lot of it has to do with the use of antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, even if there's nothing wrong with the antibiotics themselves, okay, just the simple fact that you're not letting the body handle something. It's like you get yourself a prize fighter, okay?
Uh-huh.
But you don't ever let him spar with anybody because you don't want him to get hurt before a fight. How well is he going to do at the fight?
Yeah.
Probably not too good.
Exactly.
You know? And so if we never let our immune system fight, of course it's not going to be able to withstand something like this.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even going to be up and active. It's going to be like, hey, it's being done for me. I'm going to kick back and let things go.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I think that's the problem, is that environmentally, we're creating a condition where we're weakened. That's why some people fall to it and some people don't.
Mm-hmm.
People that are eating wholesome, fresh foods and eliminating properly and exercising properly, they get out in a situation like that, they may get it in their system and they may get a little bit sick and your body's immune system takes care of it and it's over.
Mm-hmm.
These other people, They get exposed to it, and their immune system is not working because you've been working for it, taking antibiotics. And so it gets in, and it stays there, and it multiplies, and it multiplies really fast. You know, these fungi simply divide, you know, simple cell division, or they produce spores, you know, and then those spores then can become fungi, you know. So, yeah, I think where we need to look is what we do to prevent it from happening, not what happens when it's there. We can talk about that too, you know, because there are natural procedures to take care of the problem after you've come down with it. But the first thing is, let's talk about making yourself healthy enough that you can be in these environments and not be subject to them.
Yeah, because David, one thing I did notice, and I saw it even with the most recent case, two things I noticed is growing up picking in the same field as other people or the same construction site as other people. I was a no-milk diet my whole life.
Because you didn't like it?
No, my parents said no.
Oh, well, good for them.
They had I had a Dr. Sampath was his name. He was from India. He was excellent. He was actually naturally trained first and then got his MD when he came to America. He was like a childhood doctor friend of my parents. And he said, no, dairy, no dairy. It's not good for anybody.
Well, weren't you fortunate growing up?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that whereas you watch people, typically when they get to work in the morning, you know, there's that kind of slush time because generally you'd show up early, of course, and kind of figure out what the day's going to go or what the tasks are at hand. And, it's quite common to watch guys pull out, cartons of milk, chocolate milk, whatever, because it's a breakfast food, they think, and start out the day. And the most recent case, I know that 2 pints of milk go down his pipe every morning, on his drive to work. And, I do know also with that skin blemishes, that dermatitis-looking stuff that it causes. You know, you talked about how sunlight would kill it, and it's hard obviously in the lung part, but exposure to the sunlight on the skin areas, he started getting the red blotchy areas, almost like, I forgot the name of the eczema-looking stuff. And the sunlight wiped it out. That's all it took. There was no creams or nothing. So that, because they were on his back and stuff.
The safest way to do that is to drink a lot of carrot juice prior to exposing yourself to the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, a lot of berries.
Mm-hmm.
And in your area, dang, grapefruit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at least down when you drop out of those mountains.
Yeah.
But, yeah, grapefruit juice would be a wonderful thing to drink and then expose yourself to the sun. And then the sorlins that you get in the grapefruit juice are going to help you get rid of the problem on the skin.
Well, I think that is one of the contributing things, because if you got a mucus-forming diet with milk at the pinnacle of it, mucus is in the lungs, heavy. So I think you're just feeding those fungi spores.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, this is how your body works, okay, is you take in nutrients, okay, and your cell structure in the intestinal tract produces mucus to feed the friendly flora that's in there. Okay, and so it works very synergistically. The friendly flora that's in your intestinal tract then protects you from these foreign invaders that's not supposed to be there, you know, like these fungi. But when you drink a lot of milk and eat a lot of mucus-forming foods, then a different type of mucus is produced. Not that thin mucus that feeds our probiotic, our friendly flora, but a very thickened mucus that actually can kill the friendly bacteria that we have in our system. And this heavy mucus then needs to be eliminated by something that wants to eat it. Okay. So then we've got these foreign invaders that come in, and boy, that's their territory. Wow, this is something they really can live on.
Mm-hmm.
So we provide an environment for these invaders.
Mm-hmm.
the thickened mucus we don't need in our system at all. That doesn't help.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't help with the natural mucus that's produced by ourselves. This other stuff, it's just baggage.
Mm-hmm.
That baggage is going to have to be removed by somebody, and so all these organisms are opportunistic, and if the environment's there, that's when they come in and they take up residency.
Because mm-hmm.
you're feeding them.
Mm-hmm.
It's not your body that's producing it to feed them, it's what you took in and isn't utilized.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the best thing for this valley fever is prevention, and that is, as you just mentioned, don't drink milk. Don't do dairy products. Don't do processed grains. Keep your body in a fit condition so that there's nothing there for these foreign invaders to have.
Mm-hmm.
They're just living off a sick system.
Mm-hmm.
You've created a sick system.
And I think it's...
Hostess cupcakes and Coca-Cola does not, you know, create an environment conducive
yeah.
for health.
Mm-hmm.
And create an environment and conducive for disease.
Mm-hmm.
And disease basically is, I think, nature's way of cleaning you up.
Mm-hmm.
Either cleaning you up or getting rid of you.
Mm-hmm.
You won't scar the landscape, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think, too, it's, you know, it's like any other scavenger. If you go to an open dump site, I mean, what do you have? You have the scavenger animals, and obviously there's tons of junk out there that grows that, you know, isn't viewable by the human eye.
And they're not there where there's not junk, right?
Yeah, exactly. Where if it's not a dump, you ain't going to have scavengers. So.
And this is just scavengers on a smaller level,
mm-hmm.
a microscopic level, that nature uses.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way nature is.
Mm-hmm.
And nature's not going to allow us to be sickly.
Mm-hmm.
Nature, you know, destroys the sick and protects the healthy.
Mm-hmm.
When a lion goes after a herd, it doesn't take the biggest, strongest animal. It picks off the weak ones.
Mm-hmm.
Nature's just geared that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something we can't buck. It's a law of nature. And the way to be within the law is to obey the laws of nature. And the laws of nature are you eat what's good for your species.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And what's good for our species is raw organic food.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need the chemicals. We don't need the additives. We don't need the preservatives. We don't need anything. What we need is fresh, raw, natural, organic food.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned a lot of words there, and I think most people don't quite get it, because sometimes people will sell organic, but it's garbage.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Organic sugar, you know, I look at that and I'm going, did somebody miss the idea? You know? What good is organic sugar?
Mm-hmm.
You process everything out of it that's good, and just because it was raised organically doesn't make it good. It's a bad product, because
mm-hmm.
it's not wholesome. It's a part of some food, if it's even food at all, and that was probably just a chemical.
Mm-hmm.
So staying away from those types of foods, staying away from, you know, parts of foods, staying away from these almost chemical substances that are created from food, that's how we prevent these diseases. That's how we can live out in the desert and not have a problem, you know, with what's naturally there. You know, yes, you're probably going to want to, you know, protect yourself a little bit by wearing something, you know, like, you know, you see the old Western movies, you know, John Wayne movies, they always had the bandana they put over their noses when a dust storm came up.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knew to protect yourself from dust. That's not a good thing to get in anyway,
mm-mm.
even if you're healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, masks, you know, respiratory masks and things would be a really good idea if you're going to be going out there working, you know. We talked about this the other day. Remember, Doyle, what types of things we could do if we're in that environment? And, you know, one thing that
yeah.
can be done
mm-hmm.
is a little product they have at the herb shop that's called nose ointment. And you can take that ointment and you put it inside your nostrils and it just kind of stays there. And so it kind of like traps and there's a barrier of aromatic principles that are constantly released. And so as these microorganisms come into your nostrils, they're killed.
Mm-hmm.
The plants use these essential oils for the same purpose
mm-hmm.
as fungicides, as antibacterial agents, to protect themselves from microorganisms. And if we put the same substance on us, yeah, it does the same thing. So So mm-hmm. there's one thing they could do.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to have a mask on all the time, you know, and just have that on the side of their nostrils. But that plus, you know, something to protect them from getting dust up would be really good, because on that dust, you're going to have the little riders with it.
Uh-huh.
But the little riders are by themselves, not on the dust. Boy, you're going to kill them as they go through it fast.
Mm-hmm. You know, David, before you go on with any more of these, because I know that is working good, the nose ointment, like you say, it acts like kind of like a filter. I don't know how to describe it. I guess, like, for somebody who can't imagine what we're saying, I guess, like, when you put Vicks, just a little dab below each nostril, that is a common technique for guys in real dusty environments. It just simply traps the stuff. Or if you're in an area of a horrendous odor, like dead cattle, and, you know, the open pits, you got to bury them in. Well, while you're moving them, it's horrible. So that's a common trick, and it's just to keep that dust and odor out. But I've had nothing but luck, and so has everybody else that I've ever sent to the herb store with the publications and sprouting mixes, formulas. So could you give out information how someone could get in contact with the herbal store?
Sure. They have a toll-free number. It is 888-372-4372.
Okay.
And if you can't remember that, it's 888 Dr. C Herb.
That's easy. 888 Dr. C Herb.
DRC Herb, yeah. Or 888-372-4372.
All right, yeah, because I've my little sister, granted she's not little, but in age, but I call her that because she's younger than me. She had her first baby, and a lot of the gifts for the baby shower came from the herbal store. The vaccine books, awareness books of vaccine, and herbal home health care, and then some formulas and et cetera is what we gave, mailed out to the baby shower for her. She doesn't live in this state, rather than some plastic rattle or some other crap. So there's a wonderful plethora of stuff there, information and stuff.
Give something useful, sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, she was quite intrigued and took the book to heart on the warnings of vaccines. I don't recall the particular title now. I had one of the staff help me with it.
Vaccines,
I just knew it was carried.
Really safe and effective.
Yes. Yeah.
By Miller.
Mm-hmm. By Miller. That's it. Exactly. And she took it to heart. I sent it out. She got it about 4 weeks before she just had her baby Saturday. And, but she got it about 4 weeks ago, read it in 2 day period. And that includes working. She owns her own business, and fit time in to read it at night and took it to heart and didn't allow the hospital to do jack with the baby when it was born.
You know, and I think if people really, really wanted to know, you know, the dangers of these vaccines, if society really wanted to know, if the medical profession really wanted to know, they would do a study and see the correlation between when vaccines are administered and when most baby deaths occur.
Mm-hmm.
And when they come down with autism, and when they come down with all these different conditions caused from the vaccines,
mm-hmm.
I think people would have their eyes open. They'd be so surprised that a lot of the diseases and conditions that we have in America are caused by the medical profession.
Mm-hmm.
They cause them.
Mm-hmm.
Laid right on their doors. They're the ones that are injecting them, and they're causing these conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the statistic on autism right now? It's one in 125 or something like that?
Yes.
Just about 10 years ago, it was one in like 250,000 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or 2,500, I'm sorry, not 250. But, I mean, it's just like it's grown in leaps and bounds, I think, with the vaccination program.
Mm-hmm.
And autism is just the tip of the iceberg. You know, ADD and all those other things that are more widely spread, I believe, are just milder forms of autism.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at it that way, then most all of our kids are getting affected from the vaccines. You know, a lot of teachers think that about 40% of boys are ADD.
Yeah, but I think, you know, I was in the teaching profession, and I think a lot of that is I'll tell you, some of the staff that was around me, I wouldn't have let them mow my garden or take care of my anything.
I'd have ADD if I had a boring teacher.
Exactly. And I think they want, they've got so many controls on the school-age children nowadays. They have no way to get that energy out. Playtime and outdoor time is constantly reduced more and more.
I can't believe they took away recess.
Yes.
That's the only thing that got me through school.
Exactly. You waited for recess, and if you weren't good, you got to stay inside and miss recess. So you were good.
Incentive for being good, yeah.
And then you got out and ran crazy for 15 minutes, three times a day or four times a day.
You needed that running crazy for 15 minutes, so when you come back, you could concentrate.
Mm-hmm.
Even today, you know, I can sit here in my office and go, I got to go take a walk. I got to go move my body so I can think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, that a lot of that happens. But as far as the actual conditions, you know, where you're talking allergies and situations that are closely involved with autism,
mm-hmm.
you know, those are manifesting with kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I think it's all the same thing. It's just some kids get hit with a stronger form.
Mm-hmm.
Autism is about the strongest, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But they keep giving names to all these different conditions. They're all about the same.
Mm-hmm.
They just manifest a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the problem with heavy metals and the problem with grains, because most autistic kids, well, yeah, I think, yeah, the majority of them have something that's very similar to celiac disease. We talked about celiac disease on your program.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that's what's manifesting. So, I think the vaccines, the antibiotics, all these things that, quote-unquote, are preventative in the medical profession are actually causing more problems than they're solving.
Mm-hmm.
If they're solving any at all.
Exactly.
So, the very best thing to prevent valley fever is to go out there healthy,
mm-hmm.
not to go out there sick. And most everyone's going out there sick. Even if they don't feel sick, they're sick inside.
Mm-hmm.
Their system is all clogged up with mucus and waste and just a perfect environment for these opportunistic molds and viruses and bacteria, fungus to get in.
Mm-hmm.
So be healthy.
Exactly. And you know,
wear some protection.
Mm-hmm.
Use a little nose ointment thing, you know, to help with kill them as they go in. All those things are going to help.
Well,
now, once you have the problem, we ought to talk about that, huh?
Yeah, and I think it's kind of neat that, in a way, that one of the easy ones that you can cook with it, we grow tons of it here at our house, and we don't have to do any work because you plant it before the winter, and it gets its freeze and comes up on its own. Honestly, we grow regular and Indian heirloom. It's a purple color in that case. You can buy it at any store. It's garlic. And the fact that it starts out with flu-like symptoms, maybe you don't diagnose it as valley fever at home right away, but the simple fact is if it ends up just being a flu, the garlic works for that too. So either way, you're safe. It's a safe bed of treatment.
Yeah, you know, garlic's ubiquitous, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's all over the world.
Yep.
The flu's ubiquitous. It's all over the world.
Yep.
This valley fever, maybe not be ubiquitous, but something like it's going to be somewhere, you know? And in the East, they've got Lyme's disease.
Mm-hmm.
And you're probably looking at something very similar as this valley fever.
Mm-hmm.
I think in our area, they got, what's it called? Mountain fever.
Mountain fever.
Yeah, you know?
And we've got hantavirus like crazy in Arizona.
Yeah, so, you know, wherever you are, there are going to be some of these problems, and the problems manifest in people that are not healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, garlic, very first thing we want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And that itself may take care of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And onions, you know, the relative.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing we can do. You know, some people don't have as easy time getting garlic down. I can understand that. They could get a lot of more onions down.
Mm-hmm.
And what I like to do is make an onion soup.
Mm-hmm.
And what you do is you saute those onions in olive oil,
mm-hmm.
and then you add vegetable broth to the mix instead of beef broth,
mm-hmm.
and some tamari, and it makes a really nice soup. And when that soup's cooked, then you take it off the stove. When it's down to the temperature you're actually going to eat it, then you press your fresh garlic into it, and you got onions and garlic, and boy, that is quite the cure right there.
Mm-hmm. You know, David, with the boys and the homeschooling, we would let them have like a quarter or semester in the public schools just for the sake of the social skills, if I guess is what you'd call it. But, you know, they could play soccer or something with their friends from the neighborhood and stuff. And that's the only time they got sick, was that one quarter or one semester each year in the public schools. But because of your schooling and Eva being a master herbalist, that onion soup was one of the first things she'd make. Skip the Campbell's chicken soup in a can. Eva always did that with the boys, and it worked. And the onions on the chest, you know, after they're baked low.
Yeah, you either bake them or, again, you can saute them. Just don't get them to get brown.
Mm-hmm.
And you put that to not when they're too hot, but when, you know, they're you can work with your hands with them, and you go ahead and put them right on the chest. Put some old cotton cloth on top of that, some plastic and cloth around the torso to hold it on, and, yeah, you got yourself a great poultice that's going to take care of most of the lung problems.
Mm-hmm. And I can verify it does work. I did it with myself, and even the onions are not a difficult thing. I mean, I totally by myself. I did it with the baking, so I because I was going to do other stuff, and that let me get two things done at once. And I did, like you say, it was just that kind of laid back, so it wasn't just sliding off my chest. And then the cloth, and I used a piece of Saran wrap, and then I used a very wide ACE bandage. And I, you know, you're not strapping it on trying to crush your rib cage. You're just holding it there. And I was able to walk around and continue working around the house.
And if you don't feel too self-conscious, you can get a big woman sports bra, and that'll hold it on.
Yeah, I guess it would, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. But, no, it's so...
Are those, you know, those tube tops that girls wear?
Mm-hmm.
Boy, those hold on really good, too.
Mm-hmm. So it really is so simple, and we've treated youth, adults, with this onion thing to cover anything that was a lungy, mucusy thing, and coughing, and the cough formula from your school, which, you know, we're not going to give out all these recipes. People need to go learn them so they have a foundation, but... That and the garlic and the onion soups and all that, we've treated all age groups. It's not inconvenient. And it's not this take this pill four times a day for 10 days and then go get a refill. It's usually 1 or 2 days and it's done. And it's a lot cheaper. It's amazing. You can go to the store and spend a whopping $5 or $6 for everything.
Yeah, it can be pretty cheap. And it can be even cheaper than that. How much does water cost?
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing, you know. Mm-hmm. And so one of the therapies that you can use for valley fever is hydrotherapy,
mm-hmm.
where all you need is hot water and cold water.
Mm-hmm.
And you put the person in hot water and have them drink plenty of hot water and sweat it out.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they're done with their bath of hot water, then you give them a quick bath in cold water,
mm-hmm.
or a quick shower in cold water, you know, and get all those pores closed up, put them to bed, and they'll continue to sweat, and they'll sweat out the problem.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get any cheaper than free.
No, and
And we teach those things at the school of natural healing. We teach you how to economically take care of yourself, but not just so much economic. The better way to take care of yourself so that it doesn't come back, so that you actually clear up the condition.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's neat, too, that how the School of Natural Healing teaches you to attack the actual problem, not the symptoms. And it's, you know, not to be, like as if it's crude or something, but it's low tech. It's something that anybody can do. It doesn't need centrifuges and a lab and microscopes. To run a hot bath.
You're a rocket scientist.
Yeah.
For natural procedures.
No? Mm-hmm. So I think it's just a wonderful tool, and those hot baths and typically a hot tea that we've used with youth, adults, everything to help people out is we've done yarrow tea, and but again it is hot, you know, just like the bath is, and then followed up like you say, and we've typically followed up with hot and cold shower, like 10, count to 10 on each cycle, and do like 10 cycles, but always, you know, end with cold for the longest, and then, and yeah, and get them to bed, and it works.
You know, it's really interesting that the school's goal is to put an herbalist in every home and a master herbalist in every community. You know, like I mentioned, it's not to put you know, the medical profession out of business. It's so that we can use their services. You know, when they're all bogged down with little things that you could take care of at home, you know, emergency things might not get taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of these hospitals aren't given the emphasis to emergency that they should because they're making more money off the other things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're even getting some hospitals closing down because that's basically what they were, was emergency hospitals, you know. And the money's not there. The money's in other things.
Mm-hmm.
And if we all become an herbalist, if we have an herbalist in every home, dang, just think, there's going to be plenty of doctors to go around, and then maybe they won't cost them much if there's plenty to go around.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you don't have to go sit there in 2-3 hours in a doctor's office waiting for an appointment to see him for, what, 30 seconds?
Or, mm-hmm.
You know, 2 minutes and 45 seconds?
Mm-hmm.
You know, doggone it. You know, these guys should be able to spend some time with their patients.
Mm-hmm.
And if we all become herbalists, then they can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Then we won't need them for anything but the really terrible things that they're the best at.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, they're not quite sure about things anyway.
No.
You know, I guess where we're the envy of the world is in our recitation. What's it called?
Resuscitation. Mm-hmm.
You know, and our emergency wards where they, you know, they're in an accident and they can bring them back and everything, you know. But even then, did you see that article about that? They're questioning when death really happens?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like, you know, the article basically talked about, hey, maybe we're doing the wrong thing. Maybe the shock in their heart and pumping them with oxygen, you know, maybe that's what's killing most of them. Because what did they say? 30-something percent of people that go into those procedures survive?
Mm-hmm.
Which means 70-something percent don't.
Mm-hmm.
60-70 percent don't. And it's just all a matter of, they looked at it, and after the brain stops working, after the heart stops, those cells are alive for hours.
Mm-hmm.
And what kills them is the rush of oxygen and electricity going through them.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they're thinking, maybe there's a different way of bringing people back, you know, rather than just shocking them back. So even the thing that they're the best at, they're looking at, you know, to improve.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't go wrong learning natural procedures to take care of most everything that happens around your home.
Exactly.
It's just so silly that you had a sick baby to pack him up in the car and rush off to a hospital.
Uh-huh.
That's inconvenient right there.
Mm-hmm.
And you might lose him on the way.
Mm-hmm.
Why not just take care of it at home?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it's just about everything can so many things, you know, heart attacks, you name it, you know, boy, I'm not even thinking right now. All the emergency things, you know, like going into shock and all those things, you know, those all be taken care of at home.
Yeah.
All of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you just save the most emergency things for the medical personnel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things would work so much better in this country. Because, you know, we spend the biggest part of this big gross national income that we're hauling in on medical care.
Yes.
And it's ridiculous. We don't need to. We could do something useful with all that money.
Yeah.
I just, you know, they're always talking about don't have enough money, don't have money. And right now, I guess what's happening is the Auditor General of the United States is going around telling people, we're going to go broke.
Mm-hmm.
That we're not even going to be able to pay the interest on the loans and things.
Mm-hmm.
Even if we have a booming, you know, economy.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're bankrupting this country with modern medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And the last thing they did, I can't believe it, Republicans and Democrats alike, George Bush, you know, is he really a Republican? You know?
He's a communist.
Yeah. At any rate, so what does he do? He signs his bill by both the House and the Senate,
yeah,
saying, hey, yeah, let's just give everybody their drugs.
Yep.
Let's pay for everybody's drugs. You know, as though the pharmaceutical industry doesn't have enough money already.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're going to ensure that they get all the business they need by making drugs free and herbs expensive.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I think somebody, saw the little boy that put his finger in the dike. Someone in the scientific community, the medical profession, saw that it's starting to leak.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they plugged it was to convince Congress and the president to support pharmaceuticals.
Yep.
Against the only real competitor they have, which would be the herb business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the vitamin and mineral and all those things, that's all nice and well and everything, you know, but the only real competition to drugs are herbs.
Uh-huh.
And now, herbs cost and drugs are free.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Well, that's also part of that socialist mindset, and they've warped this country into thinking that most people think that they're owed something by Uncle Samuel. And it's a load of crap. And it's not free. Someone's paying for it. So at the same time that now they're going to get this mass free medication, the same people that are hooping and hollering how good that is are going to be bitching when sales tax go up and gasoline taxes and every other tax. It's not free.
You're going to pay for it.
Yeah, it's not free.
Take money away from our roads and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
It's not having infrastructure at all. It's not having any police. It's not having anything. You know, it's just have medicine.
Yeah.
Isn't it ridiculous?
Yeah, the opiate of the masses. If we keep everybody doped up, they won't realize that there's a problem in this country.
Yeah, and you know, why is our country where it is? Why are we number one in so many things? Why do we have more money than anybody else? Because we've got the free market system.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've got competition.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the way it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone, you know, a lot of people out there are going, ooh, capitalism, that's such a terrible, terrible word. But, you know, it's capital that's accumulated that provides jobs.
Yep.
You know, and if you don't allow people to make capital, you know, then there are no jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have the great society we have, the money advantage over the rest of the world that we have, because we've had that type of system, and then they keep eroding at it. And one of the biggest places right now they're eroding at it is in the medical field.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by allowing no competition, then you're going to have an inferior product. That's
yep.
what they've got.
Well, and
not only is it an inferior product, it's something that's, I don't know if they could have done this by accident, but it's something that their medication, you know, never cures anybody, placates it for a while, and makes it worse so that they make more money.
Yep.
Because there's no competitor to go to. Well,
yep.
I don't like your stuff because you made me sicker. But there's no one to go to. They're eliminating the competition.
Mm-hmm. Well, with elimination of competition, government subsidizing of it, of the programs, it's economic socialism in its purest form. Clear back to the Lenin and Stalin and Karl Marx, it's exactly how they described how you have a socialist economy. And the problem is that I can't, let's say they have this wonder drug that's going to be now subsidized and convince people you can come get it for free and there's no competitional alternative and it doesn't even work. You know, I can't make that at home. I don't have a giant lab like Dow or DuPont. But what I can do at home and what is right now, right all over the property, and it's no labor. We have tons of echinaceas and garlics and horseradish and dandelions and marshmallow. All this growing everywhere. And that's something I can do, and it works. And I don't have to rely on them or rely on my neighbor's taxes taken out of his check to subsidize it. I do it myself.
You know, it's interesting talking about another fever disease.
Mm-hmm.
This whole malaria thing.
Mm-hmm.
The purified malaria drugs that they have lasted for a long time, which is amazing that they lasted as long as they did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but malaria now has become resistant to the malaria drugs.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, we build a medical profession on. I mean, we build the pharmaceutical industry on.
Mm-hmm.
These malaria drugs. And so here we have these malaria drugs that aren't working. They do have a new drug out, comes out of China, called artemisinin. our pharmaceutical companies did everything they could to keep that from being used. It's the only thing that works. I mean, they want people to keep taking something that didn't work.
Yeah.
But that's what was going on. And so then what does Bill Gates do? How many millions did he donate for this malaria cause?
Yes.
It's all going to go?
Yeah.
It's all going to go into an American pharmaceutical company to be able to take the artemisinin and get a patentable drug out of it and take it away from the Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that the more they purify this substance, the more they get it into a drug, you know, for fighting malaria that is going to be so purified, the quicker it's going to have malaria become resistant to it.
Mm-hmm.
But if they go back to the herb where they got it from, Artemisia annum, which is Sweet Annie,
mm-hmm.
malaria can't get resistant to that because it's a growing living plant that always changes to adapt, and so there will never ever be resistance to Sweet Annie.
Mm-hmm.
That malaria will never get accustomed to it. Sweet Annie will always kill malaria.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's so highly complex. You know, you just take out an alkaloid and fight it with that. It'll work for a while. But boy, Sweet Annie has got, 2.5 pages, 8.5 by 11, of chemical constituents.
Yes.
Malaria can never become resistant to that.
Mm-mm.
And the experience that I've, you know, seen where friends of mine have gone to the Amazon and to Africa, you know, they were protected with the Sweet Annie, and the people that took the other stuff were not.
Mm-hmm.
They came down with the conditions.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate.
No, it's just a fact. And like I say, I like the fact that in really no room, using square foot gardening techniques and just simple, low-tech things and no expensive tools or tractors and a little bit of water, we are able to grow tons of cures right on our property. They're right here for the picking.
Right.
And it's so simple.
Grow your medicine. You don't have to go buy it anywhere.
Mm-mm. And we grow stuff that doesn't grow in this region on our own property.
Right.
Just by changing.
And why grow stuff that if it's growing there, you go get it for free.
Yeah. Yeah, mullein and all that, that's just all over, heck, marshmallow all over, dandelion. All those are easy, so you don't waste your water on them. Echinacea grows like crazy here just for landscaping, and people don't even realize what's at the root of it. So it's easy to go to anybody in town in their beautiful purple daisy patch that people call them and get some shoots. And you get the shoots for free to move to your property. And the garlic, we pick it. We pull all but a few stalks, let it go to seed, put it in a paper bag, and then before the winter sets in, you just plant all your garlic seeds, and it comes up on its own the next spring. All our garlic's already knee-high. We've already been picking it because it starts so early and on its own.
Mm-hmm.
I've only had to water it like 5 or 6 times this entire season, and it's almost done, so... All this stuff, the horseradish comes back every year, and just the bushes are bigger and bigger. It's huge. And we don't poison, we don't use any pesticides on the property, so the dandelions aren't wiped out. It's just real easy.
You know, that's what I love about herbology, is that we're teaching something that people aren't dependent on us for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they want it, it's absolutely free.
Mm-hmm.
It's just sitting out there in the open spaces.
Mm-hmm.
It's out there in the mountains. It's out there in the plains. It's out there wherever it's needed. It's there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all people have to do is learn how to do it. And we teach them that at the school.
Mm-hmm.
We teach them how to gather their own medicine, you know, to be totally independent.
Yeah.
And isn't that wonderful to be totally independent?
I personally like it. Now, we've only got 45 seconds left, so let's get out your website and contact information.
Again, the schoolofnaturalhealing.com, or if you want to make it faster, the initials of the school, snh.cc. Get you right there.
Mm-hmm.
That'll give you information on the school and how to register, and you can register right there on the internet, or you can call us up and talk to us about it. And, you know, I can't think of a better thing you can do for your body, yourself, your mind, your spirit, than to take our course.
I agree, Dave, and I want to thank you for being on today and coming to the conference again in August. And ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Hour of the Time here with David Christopher as a guest and your host, Doyle Shamley, here in Eager, Arizona.